everybody. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. Here on WBAI 99.5 FM on your dial. Bringing new ideas, concepts, and guests to lead a more positively minded life. Leading a more positively minded life. There are so many gifts and opportunities we have. Chances we get where we can just change things for the better. And then there are people who go around making things better. I love to have them around. Today in the studio with me, I have Leah Tao. Leah, who is with The Moth. The Moth. Have you heard of The Moth? Do you know about The Moth? You're going to learn about The Moth. It's an opportunity. It's one of the good things out there in life. It's one of the ways that you could find out things about yourself. Let's talk about it. Let's just talk about it. Leah, I'm going to let you do the introduction. What is The Moth?
Thank you so much. The Moth is an organization that began in New York 12 years ago, and we're dedicated to the art of the great story. So we have a number of different programs where you can come tell stories and hear stories. People come to our main stage and shows where we have a theme every time, and we try to get together five very different voices on that theme. So usually we'll have a couple of headliners, a well-known actor, maybe a well-known writer, but we'll also have an astronaut or a cop or a New York City cab driver or unique voices from all walks of life.
Tell about some of the famous people who have been, the well-known people, Salman Rushdie and Garrison Keillor. Who are the other people who have spoken through The Moth? Hundreds, right?
Hundreds, yes. We've had Ethan Hawke, Margaret Cho, Sarah Jones, Frank McCourt, Spalding Gray, George Plimpton, hundreds of Sam Shepard, hundreds of celebrated writers, actors, performers, artists, musicians who love the art of the well-told story.
The well-told story, well said, because, you know, one of the things I very often, I hear a lot of people telling stories because being on the radio, people want to tell me stories I might repeat. But they're not well-told stories. I can tell you, somewhere around halfway through them, I'm kind of nodding off because the story is badly told. Is there an art to telling a story well?
There absolutely is. And we at The Moth actually work with all of the storytellers who appear on our main stage to help them tell their stories well.
So if you have all the people who come up who want to tell stories, or do you automatically assume that everybody's a storyteller?
We do not assume. We did that when we started 12 years ago and quickly discovered that it didn't work that way.
Yeah, yeah.
Even people who are natural storytellers, you know, we all know these people who are raconteurs and we sit with them at a dinner party and they're just great storytellers. But even those people, when they suddenly stand on stage in front of 500 people that they don't know and they have to tell something very personal about themselves without a script, they become self-conscious in a way that they're not when they're at a dinner party with eight people. And so everybody, even the natural raconteurs, really need help figuring out, what is my story? How am I going to tell it? What's important? What goes into the story? What's not relevant? And we do all of that work with the people in advance. Because it's really a challenge for everyone. You know, the writers have to get away from writing. They're used to standing on stage with a book in front of them and reading to people. The actors are used to standing on stage acting, performing some kind of piece, but not as themselves. You know, the cop or the astronaut have never put together a narrative or stood in front of a live audience. So for everyone, it's really a challenge that's quite different from what they normally do.
Yeah, I know. Drummers don't dance.
Drummers don't dance, and they don't usually tell stories either.
but just to go back now, when you say we teach and we do, you've worked with a variety of groups. You've worked with people who are in rehab programs. You've worked with children. You have programs for that.
Yes.
We're teaching people how to be heard. It's a very important thing. There's the mind of the abstract sequential thinker, which I'd love to introduce you to, is the person who could only tell a story, but the story has so many tangents that you can't follow them.
Yes.
Now, that means that the sequence, and they can't help it. Their mind can't help it. Their mind always splits into two different sections. When you get someone like that and you're teaching them to tell a story,
yeah,
how do you help them?
Well, we have these are two different programs we're talking about. We, in fact, have several programs at the Moth, and I'm sure in the course of the hour we'll cover all of them. But in the community outreach program that you referenced, which we call the Moth Shop program, we work primarily with high school students and with adults in some form of social rehabilitation. So people who are transitioning out of prison, out of homelessness, off substance abuse, and who are in some form of job training or some other way of trying to re-enter society after having been marginalized, you know, often for many years. And with those people, it really is our goal, yes, to get them to tell their story, but also beyond that, to give them the tools that they need in order to understand that they can shape the narrative of their own lives, to give them the tools that they need in order to be better communicators, to connect with people, to succeed at job interviews and exams and all of these things that they're facing that are really going to determine how well they're going to do in life.
Could you tell me some of the basic tools that you have to teach people who may not be able to do that? I mean, you have to teach them eye contact and presentation and what they do with their hands. What do you do? What kind of things do you do?
Well, you know, I also want to mention to you that the Moth actually does corporate training work as well, and we do that to raise money. All of the money that we make from that program actually goes into the community outreach program. It's one of the ways that we fund that program. But in the course of doing so, we've also discovered that many of the major companies around this country are willing to pay, you know, a significant amount of money for us to do this kind of training because they know it works. And so the community outreach program really started with the simple idea that it would be great for people who to have a chance, you know, whose stories would otherwise go unheard, who would not come to us and say, I want to tell a story. People that we needed to reach out to and say, your story also needs to be heard. You have a voice. It's important that it's heard. You have an important story to tell. And it's, quite frankly, important for the rest of the community to hear that story if we want to be truly inclusive. So that was the starting point. And we did think, well, this will probably also help people in some way. But it started from that very basic idea that it would be cathartic and instructive and important for them to feel heard and be heard. But over the years and also doing the corporate work, you know, we've discovered that there are some very basic communication tools. We don't teach the most basic presentation class. You know, I think there are many, many corporate consultants out there who do that, who say, look to the right, look to the left, you know, make eye contact, do this with your hands, don't do that with your hands. And we think that's all great, but we try to go a level deeper and say, beyond what you do with your hands or beyond how you stand and those sort of more technical things, what are the ways that you can use storytelling to connect with people? Storytelling is an incredibly powerful tool to remind all of us that despite our differences of opinion, whether we're, you know, a businessman making a sales pitch, or we're just a human being trying to get by in life and be less isolated. You know, there's a way that stories can celebrate all the ways that we're different, but also remind us that underneath it, there's a common human core and something that we all share. And there's an opportunity for us to connect with people like that.
So it's essential when telling a story to try to find a connection with the people who are listening to the story.
Yes.
You can't just tell a story about, you know, when I was up in Alaska and I was skiing on the slopes and talking to somebody in the South Pacific. There may not be a connection of any kind.
Absolutely.
So what kind of connection do you look for? Do you look for, like, the common human element?
Well, you know, I mean, it often starts with, you know, I was up in Alaska and I was skiing. But then for us, whether we're working with a storyteller for the main stage or whether we're doing an 8-week program in a community program, we talk to the storyteller and it's really a conversation. It starts as simply a conversation. And what we try to figure out is underneath that anecdote, what's the deeper story? What's really going on in this story? Why do they want to tell it? There's almost always a reason why people want to tell a story. If they say, oh, yeah, you know, I want to tell a story about the time I went skiing in Alaska, we say, well, you know, we try to find out why. Because if they choose that story, there's usually something deeper going on. So we look for that. It's just sort of saying, what is the deeper theme of this story? What, you know, what is the emotional core? What was really going on for them at the time? How does this story fit within the larger context of their life? And what does it say about it?
Wow, well, that's a great deal. I mean, let's just ask the audience right now. If you all were listening and you wanted to ask yourself a question, we're speaking with Leah Tao, by the way, who represents the Moth, which is a storytelling vehicle. They have a radio show. They have performances they do. Not-for-profit organization, does a lot of good in the world. And they teach people how to do presentations, how to tell their stories. Now, if you had a story, each of you listening, what story would you like to tell? Can you think of a story, Stephanie, that you would like to tell? Think of a story. Reach inside and say, there's a story I would like to tell. I would like to tell. There's a story, a number of stories that people repeat all the time. You know, they tell the story to a number of people. Like, I remember a time that I was sure I was going to be killed by something, and instead the people who were going to kill me wound up helping me. Well, the line around that, I tell that story often, because it talks about a major change in my life.
Uh-huh.
So why would we want to tell, what is the story we would want to tell? You know, what is the story you want to tell? And if everybody's now reaching inside themselves to imagine the story, we can then move that to what Leah tells us, which is, what does this story communicate about you? What do you want? What's the deeper meaning of this story? Like, for me, it was going from being on guard to trusting. It was a switch.
Mm-hmm.
I said, look, you don't always have to be on guard. See, because I learned trust at that moment. It was a major significance in my life. And then the bigger picture, how did you live before now? Without the knowledge that you could trust, was a huger picture, much bigger. And what effect does it have on my life to know that I could trust?
Yeah.
Each of these stories have dimensions like this.
Yes.
And our audience right now are thinking about stories that they want to tell. We may even get a couple of people online and ask them, tell us the stories you want to tell. Or actually, you could email it to me right now, Armand@thepositivemind.com, the story you would like to tell, and I'll read them. I'll read them on air, the stories that people tell us. So I'm going back to you, and I wanted to take that moment for our audience.
Yes.
All right. Now, so you have a place, right? You have a place called The Moth where people go. They have corporate offices here on West 38th Street. But there are a number of places where people could go who want to tell stories, and they could go, and in some places they have to pay admission. But how do they – do you let them just up on stage, or what do you do?
Well, for one of our programs, we let people just step on stage. So for those who are interested, these are the Moth Story Slams. And they're actually competitions because we wanted to give people this challenge of saying, you know, if we're not going to work with you in advance, which we do for the main stage, but we don't for the slams, they're open mic. We never know who's going to come and tell a story that night. If we, you know, we wanted people to challenge themselves to really think about the story in advance and have this dialogue with themselves that we usually have with the storytellers, which is, why are you really telling the story? Why should the audience care? You know, because if it becomes just, confession, then we say, go see your therapist or go see a priest or go see somebody else. I mean, this is not about you talking about you. The challenge really is to tell a good story. And so in order to ensure that that would happen at the slams, where we have very little control because it's open mic, we said, let's make it a competition. That way we can give people scores based on how well they follow the rules of having it be a real story with a beginning, middle, end. You cannot read, and you have a certain time frame that you have to stay within. So
you cannot be about you, though. A real story, but it's not about you?
It is about you most
of the
time.
Okay, but I thought you said you don't want somebody doing a confession or opening up.
Well, it has to move beyond that. You know, if you have to have processed what you're going through. You have to have processed. If you just stand up and tell a story about the death of a parent or something that was very tragic to you and you're just standing on stage crying as a way to share this with these people, it's not very interesting for them. You have to say, just like you did with your story about, you know, learning trust, you've done the work of saying, what was the deeper lesson of that? What was the thing I learned in that moment? What is the story really about? And having done that work, you can then use that as your editing tool.
Okay, because, but if somebody comes into an open mic, like you have an open mic night, and they stand on stage and they tell the story of their father's death, and the reason they're telling it is it makes them in some way honor their father or publicly show their emotion, and they start crying, what do you do? They're standing on stage and they're crying.
We're not preventing anyone from crying. I mean, sometimes that's an organic part of telling a story. What we ask is just that it's a story that they've thought about, how do I put this together as a story with a beginning, middle, end that's relevant and interesting and engaging for an audience. And we don't ever stop people. We do stop them in the sense that there's a time limit.
So there's on the main stage, but there's a time limit.
There's no hook, but there is a musician who plays. So on the slams, it's at the slams, it's 5 minutes. On the main stage, it's 10 minutes. So for the open mic night, you get 5 minutes. Plus, then you get a little warning. You have a minute to wrap up. And we often have 30 names in the hat, and only 10 people get picked. So there are a lot of people out there who want to tell their stories.
Do the audience ever boo somebody for telling a story?
They never boo people. I think everybody understands that this is a hugely personal and scary, you know, if not terrifying, endeavor for everybody who does it. And there's an incredible warmth. It's one of the things that I love the most about The Moth, whether it's the slams or the main stage, you know, that there's this will in the audience for the storytellers to do well. You know, you go to a comedy club and everybody's sitting back with their arms crossed and you can see it in the body language. They're going, make me laugh if you can. You know, it's sort of a challenge almost, like people don't want to laugh. But at The Moth, they know that even just getting up there and standing there and doing something that is intensely personal. I mean, many of these stories are very, very personal. We just hope they go beyond just a personal confession. They have to be a personal story, but they are still, in many cases, very personal. And to do that in front of a room full of strangers with no notes, it's just, and no props, and no musical, and no podium, and no PowerPoint, nothing to hide behind, is really scary. So the audience knows this, and they want to reward the storyteller for doing this. And so they're already sort of sending love in their direction as they're stepping out onto the stage. And that's a beautiful thing. I will say at the Story Slams that the audience sometimes boos the judges. If they think somebody gets too low a score and lower than they deserve, they'll boo the judges for scoring too low.
When a person tells a story and it's personal, you want them to have purpose behind it. You want it, in order for it to be a story, it must have something that gives something to somebody else. In order for it to be a story, it has to be, we're communicating it. I'm not just telling you about myself, but I'm telling you about myself because this, in some way, will have meaning to you.
Exactly.
Is that what we're looking for?
That's exactly the challenge.
So give me a my father died and I'm crying on stage. Bring that to a story.
Well, it would have to be a dialogue, of course, with the individual person. And you just gave this great challenge to the audience of saying, what would be your story? And then saying, what would be the deeper theme of that story? And often off the bat, people don't know. And they say, I don't know. I don't think there was one. This just happened. I don't know. But in a dialogue with us, which starts with more indirect questions, they sort of come to that. So we just talk to them. We say, tell us about your father. Tell us about your history with him. What happened around the time of his death? What is going? And so through all of that emerges these deeper themes, but they're not necessarily apparent right away. And, you know, sometimes people just aren't ready. I mean, with divorce and death and, you know, things like that, I think people need a few years before it goes from being an experience to being a story.
Have there ever been any stories told online, told that you didn't expect? Were any stories ever, like, you know, heard stories that just rocked your, that were a surprise from the open mic?
From the open mic, we have so many beautiful stories, and we never know what to expect, and it's just a wonderful thing. And sometimes people come for the very first time and put their name in and just blow us away. Yeah. Absolutely.
Could you give me an example of a great one that came in your direction that you didn't expect?
Well, I'll tell you one that's on the radio hour now in a longer form because it went on to the main stage. It's not a sad story, but it's a very funny story. It's a guy who was a lawyer, and he was doing some pro bono legal work for us. So I knew him in that capacity, not as a storyteller. Or I didn't know much else about him. I just knew he was a good lawyer. And he was kind of a young guy, and he came in one night and put his name in, and I thought, oh, interesting, Matt is in the hat. His name is Matt McGough, and he told this fantastic 5-minute story about being a bat boy for the New York Yankees. And on his very first day, Don Mattingly sends him to look for a bat stretcher. And he goes on this crazy hunt all around the clubhouse. You know, the clubhouse manager is busy. It's opening day. He's got no time for him. He sends him. So anyway, but they're all, so he doesn't know what to do. And Don Mattingly says, well, why don't you go get me a bat stretcher? And he goes to the clubhouse manager, and everybody continues with the joke. You know, the clubhouse manager says, well, I don't have one, but I think maybe Danny Tartable has one. So he goes to ask him, the right field. I forget, I'm not a big baseball person, but I think he was the right fielder at the time. And he says, would you need a right-handed one or a left-handed one? And he says, well, I need a left-handed one. Because if there's one thing he knows, it's that, you know, Don Mattingly is a great left-handed batter. And he says, well, I don't have one. I think I might have a right-handed one, but if you need a left-handed one, I think maybe you need to go into the manager's office. I think I saw one sitting around in there. So he goes into Buck Showalter's office. And in Buck Showalter's office, there's a huge press conference because it's 2 hours before first pitch on opening day. And suddenly there's this 15-year-old kid standing there in his Easter blazer, and they're all turn around and look at him, and they're like, what's this kid doing here? And he says, oh, I'm very sorry to interrupt, but I'm looking for a bat stretcher for Don Mattingly. And without flinching, Buck Showalter says, well, I don't have one, but I think maybe down at the Red Sox clubhouse they have one, so why don't you go down there? He goes down to the Red Sox clubhouse. And they say, well, we don't have one, but we need one. Guess, you know what? Here's $20. Why don't you go up to the sporting goods store and buy one for us and one for the Yankees? And he gets sent around on this wild goose chase. And it's just a funny, funny story. But I had no idea that Matt had been a bat boy or that he had this kind of storytelling in him. I thought he was just a lawyer.
There was a man. I remember I used to do a presentation up in Canada. And there was a physician who used to give these slideshow stories, and they were just terrible slide stories. He would have to show science. He was working for Wilhelm Reich. His name was Bernie Grad. And one day he's coming out on stage, and he trips over a wire. And he trips over the wire, and the audience kind of giggled. And what he did, instead of doing his normal boring slide presentation that put everybody to sleep, he said, boy, if my wife heard about this. And the audience laughed and picked up again. And he realized he was getting an audience response. Uh-huh. So what Bernie did was he started telling stories about his wife. He said, you know, my wife and getting me ready. And the audience started really getting with him. And with each slide he presented, he told more stories about his relationship with his wife. And he got a standing ovation for the first time at the end of his presentation, which was as boring and dry as you could imagine. Bernie learned from the audience, from their response, that there was something that touches them.
Yeah.
You know, that there's another way in. And he learned that he could tell stories.
Yes.
And he's gone on, I know he's gone on the circuit, and he's been lecturing forever, telling stories about his wife and presenting his very boring slides. So maybe there's somebody in the audience who doesn't know how to communicate, who doesn't know that they could make contact, who maybe wants to take a chance and tell their story and learn the art of storytelling, which is a beautiful thing. You know, I mean, it's a beautiful, it carries on forever. Did you ever see children get bored with a story? You know, when somebody's telling a story badly or a story that doesn't relate to the child and child just wants to get away. You know, so learning how to tell stories is a great thing for everybody and for the kids and for their kids' kids. Do you have the process that people would go through is they would go to the web, themoth.com, and they could learn practically everything, right?
Yes, it's actually themoth.org, although I think themoth.com will also redirect, but themoth.org, yes.
Okay.
A nonprofit.
They go there and they get that thing, right? And now they're looking through it. And what do you recommend would be a person's first step?
Well, if they're interested in telling stories, I think they should come to the Story Slam. And I think they should just see one and see how it works. You know,
when is the next Story Slam?
There's one on Monday in Brooklyn at Southpaw. They're almost every week in New York now. They're four times per month in different locations, and all of that is on our website at themoth.org.
Uh-huh.
And you can also see the themes. If you do want to put your name in and tell a story, you need to look up the theme in advance and see what's on for that night so that you can think about a story for that particular theme. But, you know, I also think often people like to just come see one and see how it works. And then from there, maybe they will dare to put their name in the hat. We also have the workshop program. And so if there are people out in the communities that either work with kids, we work mostly with high school age, but sometimes also younger children, or, with particular community groups that you think would benefit, you can also contact us about that through the website. And increasingly, we have broadened the community program because there's such an interest in it that we have said, instead of just working with the people in rehabilitation, who certainly benefit enormously because it's incredibly empowering and cathartic for them to tell their stories, but in addition to that, you know, we have now opened it up to more general community groups and saying, you know, we've worked with the Irish Center. I think we've worked with the Firefighters Association. I think we're working with the Street Vendors Association. So different associations. And so if you, or we'd work with different neighborhoods, you know, if you have a neighborhood association and you'd like us to come help you tell stories from Sunnyside, Queens or Washington Heights or whatever it may be, you know, we operate mostly in New York City. Let us know.
When on the CDs that you prepare, that you guys offer to the public, what are on the CDs? I mean, are there people telling stories?
Yes, these are recordings from our shows.
And the recordings that you've picked, that you said these are the best of them?
Yes. There's one series called Audience Favorites. Every year we have the audience vote on their favorites from the past year. And there's one series called The Best of the Moth, that we've compiled from other great stories.
Nice stuff. Is there any limitation as to the ages of the person who you allow up on stage? I mean, can they be any age from 5 to 95 or?
Pretty much. I mean, on the main, at the Story Slams, it's open to anyone who wants to come.
But it's a bar, isn't it?
It is a bar. And so it's a bar environment. And I also, we don't set any limitations. And most of the bars are pretty good about saying we will let them in so long, you know, obviously not serve them alcohol, but they should check in advance and make sure it's not a venue where it's a problem if they want to bring people who are underage. But I also want to warn people that a lot of the content that we hear at the Story Slams would not be appropriate for children, I don't think. And so I think you'd want to think twice before bringing your children. But some people bring their teenagers, but they should not be squeamish about, you know, swear words and things like that.
Well, you've also said that some of them are sold out. So how do you know? Is it really, do you imagine that if they went down there, they could get turned away? Or should you arrive like a half hour early or what?
Well, the main stage, the tickets are sold in advance on the site. So those you cannot show up at the door. I mean, it's almost always sold out in advance. And we have a show, for instance, on the 16th as part of the New Yorker Festival, and it's already sold out. So the main stage tickets need to be purchased in advance. The Slams tickets are just sold at the door. But we have found recently that people start lining up to, you know, 2 hours before the show to be sure to get in. I don't think that's necessary, but I do think that the doors open at 7, and it's a good idea to come at least a half hour, 45 minutes before then if you want to be sure to get in. Otherwise, you can just, you know, take your chances.
That sounds great. Well, we're hoping to do more work with the Moth, with Leah Tao. And we want to do more work with you guys because we'd like to support your not-for-profit organization as well. I know you could use donations over there, just as we at BAI could always use donations. So anybody who wants to take a look, if you've got your extra stuff, this is another one of the places doing good work for people. We're going to take a short break. And when we come back, we're going to be doing more about telling your story. This is Armand DeMille, my guest, Leah Tao, the Moth Radio Hour. Stephanie Dombra, my special thanks to you, assisting us with this as usual. We'll be back with you in just a couple of minutes.
Dicen que por las noches no más se le iba en puro llorar. Dicen que no comía, no más se le iba en puro tomar. Juran que el mismo cielo se estremecía al oír su llanto. Como sufrió por ella, ya está en su muerte, la fue llamando. Ay, 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 ay.
que una paloma triste muy de mañana le va a cantar a la casita sola con sus puertitas de par en par. Juran que esa paloma no es otra cosa más que su alma, que todavía la espera a que regrese la desdichada.
Nancy Ames telling a story about the paloma, about the dove, Kukurukuru. Armand DeMille here with you with The Positive Mind, with Stephanie D'Ambra and Leah Tarrell. Leah, you guys, you're at the cutting edge. I love it. You're helping people, you're reaching out to people, and people are reaching out to you. And I saw something on your website that was just plain adventurous. You had a thing where if you click on it, you could start telling a story. What is that thing? What is that little interactive thing you invented?
Well, we call it the Story Pitch Line, and we actually just launched this, so I'm glad you bring it up, because we launched a national radio show, which has currently been licensed by 180 stations around the country. It's only 5 episodes for now that are playing, but we're working on doing more and releasing more. And so we wanted a way for people who were going to hear this outside of New York City to say, well, how could I tell a story? How could I be a part of this? What stories exist out there in the community? And so we launched this pitch line where you can call in and you have a minute to record your pitch. And we're going to pick the very best of those pitches. We're going to feature them online, and we're going to give people the opportunity to then vote. And the best story is going to be the person is going to be flown to New York, unless they're already in New York, which we can't say for sure, of course. But they're going to be flown to New York, and they're going to be able to tell their story on the main stage. We also have Story Slams now in Los Angeles, for a couple of years, and we have launched Story Slams this week in Chicago and Detroit. In Chicago and Detroit, we've launched this week. So Chicago actually was Tuesday night, and Detroit is tonight, the very first Story Slam. So if you know people in those cities, you can send them there.
So people have already sent you. Let me see if we could find one here. I want to get one of the things that you possibly people have phoned in.
Oh, I'm not sure we featured them yet because we just launched it.
We did. Yeah.
Oh, yeah? Okay.
Yeah, let me teach you about your website.
Okay, good. Well, we just launched it, and I didn't know if we'd gotten any of the...
All right. And so with the people telling a story online, now you're also doing, you have a podcast available to people.
Yes, we do.
And what's on the podcast?
On the podcast, there's one free story every week. So you can go to themoth.org/podcast, or you can just go to themoth.org and you'll see a link to it where you can sign up for the podcast for free. And every Monday, we send out one story from the archives, and it's free. Their radio hour is a full hour of different stories from different programs that have been put together in a more sort of produced radio hour. But the podcast is just one story every week.
A story every week.
Yeah.
And how many what's your, how many hits have you been getting on this podcast, I imagine?
A lot. In the month of August, I think we had 900,000 downloads.
Wow.
Yeah.
900,000 downloads of the podcast.
Yeah.
So there must be something that people want, because they want to hear the story as well. When hearing a good story, it helps you step into the life of the other person.
It does.
And you could, if the story is told well, you literally step in. Now, here's something I've learned about storytelling, and I may have just made this up in my own mind. I believe that in order for you to do, there we go. In order for us to do one of these, in order for a person to do a good story, I think you have to create a visual. So if I'm telling you a story about the time I was on a road down in Haiti, and I am talking about, I'm standing there late at night, I'm cold and wet, and my clothing are wet, and I'm standing there and I'm very tired, you're watching me, you're seeing me. I think the trouble with many stories as people tell them is they don't visualize. They'll say, you know, I remember a time somewhere and I was out. They just don't give you the chance to visualize it. Is visualizing an important part of telling a story? Should the person be able to create the scene in their mind?
Absolutely. I mean, that's one of the most important things, I think. We call it, you know, you have to show them rather than tell them. I know we call it storytelling, but you really don't want to be just telling them about what happened or telling them how you experienced it. You want to show them so that they might experience it for themselves. So, you know, for instance, if you're telling a scary story about being out in the woods chased by a monster, you know, this is not your typical moth story. They're usually more rooted in our sort of modern urban lives. But, you know, just as a for instance, you're telling a story about being out in the woods and you're being chased by something. And you say, I was scared. You know, the audience goes, well, I bet you were, you know.
Sure.
But what's it to them? But if you say, I'm out in the woods and it's pitch black and I can't see my hand in front of my face and I just know something is following me and I can hear it's coming closer, but I don't know where it's coming from. What you're doing is you're taking the audience into the woods with you and you're making them scared in the process, which is so much more persuasive and engaging than if you're just telling them how you felt and they think, well, good for you, or, you know, I bet you did, but what's it to me?
Over the years, I've had hundreds of guests on this radio program, scientists, the worst of the psychologists. The psychologists get on air and they say, you know, well, people sometimes have fears of things that aren't really known to them. And they say that on the air and I look at them blankly and I say, but what are you talking about? Connect with the audience. Give them something. Talk to them about snakes. Talk to them about some kind of fear of flying. But try to be specific. Most scientists are so afraid to be direct because it commits your heart in some way. You have to be willing to face the emotion when you tell the story that paints the picture.
You have to step into it yourself, and by doing that, you allow the audience to step into it with you. And so you really have to bring those moments to life. You have to recreate them almost in real time, and you have to be very specific. You know, I had a woman once, you know, and she said, my grandmother was mean. And I said, what do you mean? And she said, well, for instance, one year she owned a flower shop, and one year she, for Christmas, she gave my brother a box with a bow, you know, a gift. And when he opened it, inside was everything he'd broken in her flower shop that year. And I said, now I get it that your grandmother was mean. When you said your grandmother was mean, I had to take your word for it. But now I felt it. And so that's the kind of stuff we're always looking for, and that people who want to tell stories should be looking for when they're thinking about their own stories, is how can I make it real for the audience? But of course, that takes a lot of time. It's a lot faster to say, I was scared, or my grandmother was mean. So how do you find a way to show it? Well, that takes a lot of time. And what that means is that you have to be very selective and economical about what goes into the story, meaning you can't tell everything that happened, everything that was going on in your life at the time, everything you know about your grandmother. you have to figure out what is the deeper theme. Like you told me earlier, you said this story was really about trust and learning trust. Well, once you know that, then you can edit and you can say, you know what, this is a very interesting fact or a funny thing that happened or a sad thing that happened, but that doesn't belong in this story. That's for another story, because this story is really about learning trust. And so I'm going to pick the moments that relate to that, and I'm then going to have time and room to let those moments really come to life so that they become real.
Well, you know, that kind of brings me to couples communicating with each other over issues sometimes, where they want to talk to each other and communicate something that may even be a need. Part of the problem of what they leave out is they're not really connecting. They're just telling something to the person.
Yes.
Being able to show who you are, and I think there are other rules. There's a rule about, you know, if the person has to ask you, who are you talking about? Because you've used too many pronouns, like, and then he or she and the, which is another mistake that people make. They forget to keep you connected to the very subject.
Yes.
Well, but Leah, I have a secret surprise for you.
Okay, what is that?
Tell me a story about you and your baby.
Wow. Well, I don't know my baby yet.
This has never been done. I know. But there is a story already, I'm sure.
I'm 6 months pregnant, so I imagine that's what you're referring to.
Sure.
We usually say to people, don't tell stories about the future because you need to know what happened already.
Yeah.
But I will say that, you know, the moth has been my baby for the last 10 years and has been an enormous amount of work. And one of the things that I am concerned about, you know, as I'm heading into this next phase is, you know, how are my two babies going to live together, which I'm sure many people who have two children, you know, worry about in a concrete way. But I don't have two children, but I have had this baby that is the moth for many, many years. And it's been a struggle and also a beautiful thing. Like many nonprofits, you know, we've been through hard times. And after 9/11, we had very little money. As did a lot of nonprofits, saw their funding dwindle. And I, at the time, was working for another executive director who decided that, you know, it was just too much pressure to always try to raise the money for this. We worked out of her home, which was a tiny apartment she had in Brooklyn. It was one of those apartments that was called a one bedroom, but there was no door between the two rooms. So it was really a studio, and that was her home and our office. And she decided she'd had enough of that and that she was going to leave and move to California to a sunnier life and try to start a family of her own, which she did. And so I was left right before Christmas in 2001 with an organization in a bunch of boxes. She was moving out and the office was moving out and I was taking over from her. And it was, I think, Christmas Eve, and it was snowing, and she had already left, and I stood out on the sidewalk with all the boxes getting soggy, waiting for a Yugoslavian man with a van who was the only person who would actually take this job on Christmas. And when he showed up, he reeked of vodka, and his van was only half the size of what we needed, and we had to wait for one of his friends to show up, and it was another hour. And by the time we finally, a board member of ours has said, I said, I don't know where we're going to move the office to. He said, well, I'm selling an apartment I just moved out of. Until I sell it, you could be there for a month or two, I guess. So we were going to move into that. It was midnight by the time we got there. They wouldn't let us move the stuff in. It was against the rules of the building. We had to leave everything in a parking garage overnight. And, you know, and then for the next couple of months, we were in this apartment and real estate agents would come through with potential buyers. And I would try to not make too much of a mess and look inconspicuous. And, you know, from there, we've grown and we've got a real office. You know, first it was sort of a broom closet that we rented at the business of another board member. And over the years, you know, now we have a staff of seven and a bunch of wonderful volunteers. And we reach people across the country. And so, you know, it's not been an easy journey, but it's been a beautiful one, and so much meaning and human connection we found in all these years of helping people tell their stories.
Who founded it?
The Moth was founded by a writer called George Dawes Green, who actually just had a book come out this summer called Ravens, which is a great, great book. He also wrote The Juror and The Caveman's Valentine and other books that people might know. And he was from Georgia. He came from an island off the coast of Georgia called St. Simons. And he would sit around with his friends on his friend Wanda's porch, and they would tell stories into the night. And, you know, when he was a kid, but also when he was a young man, they would meet on Wanda's porch, and they would have a little scotch, and they would sit there, and the moths would flutter in because there was a hole in the screen around Wanda's porch. And so the moths would flutter in, get trapped on the porch, and this little group of friends started calling themselves the Moths. And, you know, then he moved to New York City. He wanted to be a writer. He would go to a lot of literary cocktail parties. And I don't know if you've ever been to one, but cocktail parties in New York City, you know, are exhausting. Everybody's wearing black turtlenecks and their arms are crossed and they're trying to be clever and, you know, 10-second sound bites. Nobody has time to really tell stories or connect with one another as human beings. And so he really missed that. And he said, well, I don't have a porch, but I do have a living room. And I could start this in my living room in New York. And he did. He invited a few friends to come tell stories and some other friends to come listen. And very quickly, so many people showed up. He started having this salon, you know, once a month. And I think that by the third time, so many people showed up that he said, I can't have this in my living room anymore. And we moved out to other venues, you know, small back rooms, bars, cafes, slightly larger theaters, and so on. And that's really been the growth of the Moth from the start, has been that people have responded to this in such an organic way.
From what I've heard, people from all over, well, everywhere I go, have made mention of it in one way or another, you know, and you could just tell its popularity is growing. There was a thing, I don't know where I got the story from, perhaps you know the origin. I think there was an old tradition called the nail in the bucket. Do you know about this? This was a story, the Liars Club it was called.
Uh-huh.
And in the Liars Club, people would sit around and they would tell stories. But the story had to be true. When one person perceived that the story wasn't true, they had a handful of nails.
Uh-huh.
And they would throw a nail into this bucket that was in the middle of the room. And the sound of the nail hitting the bucket, it was an anodized bucket or something like that, maybe they weren't invented yet, and the sound was so clanky, it kind of told you, nah, you're not kind of staying on with your truth. And it might have been the beginning of your tradition. We just recently, in our men's group, we just got a bucket recently, so that when a member is telling a story that moves away from their heart, boom, throw the nail in to find out about it. Have you ever heard of the story before?
I've never heard of it, but it sounds great.
Yeah.
There is something very that happens when you can tell that somebody's not telling the truth, which is really, it feels almost violent, you know, because if you have established this contract between the listener and the storyteller that they're confessing something, telling something true, then when you feel that they're not, it's very disturbing, really.
So if you have an actor who's just out of work actor but wants to be on some kind of a stage and wants to practice his stage, he gets up and he invents a story that's not true about himself and he sees if he could pull it off. That's a possible venue that he could use. I'm not saying you should, but yours
yes,
is...
and we do, you know, we can't police it at the Slams, and we don't really. I mean, we kind of feel like it's so hard to pull it off. It's actually very, very difficult to tell a story that's not true as if it's true, because you can almost always feel it. There are little things that give it away. And so we're sort of like, if they can pull it off and we don't notice, what are we going to do? But also, in a way, we're so impressed that they could that we don't police it. But it's very rare that people can't tell if it's not true.
You know, sometimes when you meet somebody for the first time, they could be lying to you also and telling you stories about themselves that aren't true. This happens frequently when you meet people for the first time. They're positioning themselves, trying to make themselves look bigger than they are. You know, so they're showing you their feathers or they're strutting their stuff, and you look at them and you say, well, you know, this isn't probably true, but I like the guy anyway.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So I'll overlook this lie for now because I'm getting something out of it. And so very often you can see people present their false self. But it's fabulous when you could touch a level of authenticity. And
yes,
I would be really interested to see if the people who won your contests were the ones who had the most or highest amount of authenticity in their stories.
Absolutely. When you come, you just feel it, and you feel that the judges reward that. The ability, it's really about being present with the audience. You know, it's not just about telling a true story. It's also about how you tell it. And the more you're willing to really show yourself and really be present and not just be reciting something you've rehearsed or memorized, but say, here I am. I'm standing in front of you and I'm going to tell you something real about me. And I'm terrified, but I'm going to allow that, and I'm going to allow you in, and I'm going to allow you to help me in shaping this story with your response and the way you're going to laugh, or you're going to say ooh or ah, or the way you're going to listen to me. I'm going to allow that to kind of lift the story beyond just a monologue or beyond just a piece and have it be a true moment of communication. And that requires a lot of courage, but the more people are willing to do that, the better they'll be received at the Moth. And they'll get it back 100-fold from the audience.
Leah Tao. Leah, what's an email address where people might reach you or the Moth?
Info@themoth.org is the best way to reach
us. My name is Leah Info, and you could reach her at info@themoth.com.
Themoth.org.
Works at a lot of places. I've seen them in many, many different organizations. info@themoth.com.
Yeah, it's just the best way, because then they can direct the email to the person who works on the particular program. If they want to come to a slam, if they want to come to the main stage, if they're interested in the community outreach program, if they want to know when the radio is on, how to sign up for the podcast. You know, we have different people who are experts on all of this. As you could tell, I didn't even know if we had posted the stories from this pitch line on the website yet. So I'm not always on top of every little aspect.
Well, I'm very glad to have had you with us. And it is themoth.com, of course. Themoth.org. You're right. You would get transferred from .com. And I'm hoping that WBAI and the Moth can do more collaboratively, because I think there is stuff we could do together, because ours is a place where people want to be heard, where they want to be able to tell their stories, and they want to hear the authenticity of other people.
That's what it's all about.
That's all about.
That's the popularity of the Moth.
Thanks so much for being with us, Leah.
Thank you.
This is Armand DeMille with Stephanie Dombra. We are pretty nice there, Stephanie, huh?
I thought it was great. I'm really happy that you came, Leah.
Thank you. You were great. Thank you. This was really fun. Great conversation. And it sounds like we're philosophically very aligned.
We are philosophically very aligned. Be back with you, my friends, on Tuesday at 1 p.m. Go to email, the positive email, Armand DeMille, or armand@thepositivemind.com. You can also do info@thepositivemind.com.
That one's new, Armand.
Joe Info, he's over there. We'll be back with you on Tuesday at 1, my friends.